The real Miami, the MIA, this is where we hustle.
Every day I'm hustling, 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 every day I'm, every day I'm, every day I'm hustling.
Who you suckers think you're tripping with? Yes, I'm the boss. 745, white on white, that's Rick Ross.
Rick Ross, hustling. I'm not sure he's hustling, probably between shifts as a prison guard, but but we'll talk about that more in a minute as well. And we're and we are playing that because one of our guests who was here a few weeks back, well, a couple months ago, was Dee Watkins, who's one of Baltimore's new young writers. He's an author, filmmaker, Coppin State University's creative writing professor, runs a workshop on creative nonfiction at the Free School. And his latest article in Salon, which inspired this conversation, which is why we played the Rick Ross piece, which we'll talk about, is how glamorizing drugs is killing black kids. Good to have you back in the studio, Dee.
Thank you. Thanks for having me. I'm always glad to be back.
Good to have you here. We're also here with Michelle Antoinette, the love, the poet, is down there on the other end of the room. Good to have you here. Indie spoken word artist, musician on national performance and literary art scenes, author of Black Marks on White Paper. DDM is with us, a Baltimore-based rapper, back in the studio. It's been a bit. Good to have
What's
you back.
What's going on, Mark?
How are you, man?
I'm doing all right.
You looking good?
Yeah, I'm all right.
Dez is with Dez is with us, another Baltimore-based rapper. Good to have you in the studio,
hey,
Dez.
Good morning.
Good to meet you.
Same here.
And my old friend and colleague, Dante Wilson, who is CEO and founder of Reclaiming Our Children and Community Project Incorporated, and runs a couple of old rec centers in Baltimore and turning them into centers for young people. And I'll just say, to introduce you all so you don't know each other that well, that Dante Wilson is somebody who I think is one of the preeminent therapists working with our young inner city kids, who understands it from the inside out, and as a therapist, but also as a young man who lived it and does incredible work in his rec centers with young people, and understands how this culture is involved and all that stuff, which is one of the reasons that I will call him Dr. Wilson is in the studio. He will be. 410-319-8888. Join us here at steinershow@gmail.com. You can write to us here at steinershow@gmail.com. You can log on to our Facebook pages. Tweet me at Mark Steiner, 410-319-8888. See, Dee, you started this. This is all your fault. So, Dee Watkins, let's talk a bit about the piece you wrote about that. It was about Rick Ross and your, was it your nephew?
Yeah, my
right?
nephew.
Right.
Yeah, so my nephew loves hip-hop. He loves street culture. He's a product of East Baltimore, just like me and, you know, my friends. And I think that for all, you know, rap gets a lot of people say a lot of negative things about rap music in general, and they never focus on the positive. And one of the major things that, you know, I wanted to talk about in the piece was how two things. One, a lot of drug rap is flawed because, you know, a lot of hip hop artists are only focusing on the heaven that comes with selling drugs. So that's one, which is true. There is heavens. Two is that there's hells that they're not focusing on. And then three, we should celebrate these guys as artists. You know, they're being paid to create. They're being paid to make music. They're being paid to travel the world and inspire people through music, whether it be good or bad. They're inspiring people. They create jobs. They do all these amazing things, but we're only glamorizing and giving them love for something that's not 100% authentic and true. You know, I don't know Rick Ross as a person. I've never been a CEO. I don't know what goes on in his neighborhood. I don't know where he's from. I don't know what he does. But, you know, I do know that a lot of the things that he talks about just doesn't reflect the average drug dealer. And I wanted to talk about that, and I wanted to start that conversation.
I mean, one of the things is, I mean, a lot of people who are in this world of music, hip-hop, who glamorize selling drugs and playing the game, A, either never played the game, and that's just part of what they do to make a living, to show they play the game even though they haven't. I mean, or they might have played the game in a slight way, but not... A lot of people played it in a slight way. Mm-hmm. And I even think of somebody who I taught as a student, who I thought was one of the most brilliant minds in that entire world, Tupac Shakur. Mm-hmm. I mean, Tupac Shakur, I taught him when he was 14 years old. He mm-hmm. wasn't a thug.
Right.
Mm-hmm. Right? I mean, he was a tough guy, smart. He was more of a comedian, but he wasn't a thug. You know, but it's something that genre, mm-hmm. the way it's marketed, almost forces people into... a role of thugness, for a better word, even when it's not real.
I think, if I may, I think one of the issues is that, how you doing, Mark, all the way over there?
Yeah, all the way over there.
I think that one of the issues that we are facing is that, number one, in our society as a whole, sex sells, violence sells. You know, this is a trend that goes far beyond hip-hop, but hip-hop has been kind of, it actually was kind of ahead of that curve, if you think about when, like, you know, N.W.A. and those types of rappers came out with that very, but very true to themselves. That message was very true to themselves. But that message was kind of ahead of the curve as far as what Hollywood then took on. I mean, I wake up in the morning and I turn on my TV and the first things I see are very violent movies on FX. You can't turn your channel without seeing an NCIS, a CSI, a Law and Order. You know what I mean? So I think that as a whole, our culture really loves violence and things that are kind of just disturbing to your spirit. Our media only reports bad news. So I think also, I think in hip hop, that is personified and made almost cool and exciting, because it's like, hey, that's what's selling, so why not try it?
Dante Wilson.
I agree. I think we need to look at it from different lenses. One of the lenses is that, you know, violence do sell. You know, violence mm-hmm. do sell. However, we have a responsibility in our community. I'm glad we brought up the Rick Ross. I did read your article Saturday, and I had some teens with me Saturday, and we talked about Rick Ross. And one of the questions I asked the young people, I was like, he was a correctional officer. What does that mean? And they sat there and they pondered, and they couldn't come up with an answer. I say, well, you know, in order for you to be a correctional officer, you have to take a test.
Mm-hmm.
Now, let's look at the test scores of Baltimore City students and things of that nature, because I'm involved with the school system where everybody is really reading below grade level, doing math below grade level. But the other part is that you can't have a criminal record to be a correctional officer.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, how much money did he actually make? You know, that's entertainment. And so to be able to sit there and talk to the young people, you know, it was able to get them to look through it at a different lens now, you know. And then, I mean, I'm going to let somebody else talk. Mm-hmm. Well, we could go further into what that discussion came out of with these young people when we talk about the drug dealers and things of that nature. But it's so prevalent in Baltimore City. You know, the good sister just talked about NCIA. I like watching that, you know, because it's a criminal element about that. You see what I'm saying? When mm-hmm. I talk to my daughter, she want to do forensic science. She want to do it through a social work perspective, a therapist perspective. But when we talk about Baltimore, all you think of is The Wire.
Mm-hmm.
If you think of, if it's not The Wire, it's The Corner. If it's not The Corner, it was a movie that I watched. I don't even watch TV that much, but I was watching something on BET where a young boy went around killing everybody. Carmen was also an actor in the movie. But it all glorified drugs. So that's the prevalence that Baltimore City is reciprocating and reflecting in our community.
Let me come right back. Des, you were about to say something. Come right back here and then let's go to DDM.
I think the thing with hip-hop and artists is the POV, the point of view that most artists rap from.
Mm-hmm.
Like, you may have an artist that rap from a perception of first person, and you had a misconception that he actually done it or he's doing it. Versus a person who's a narrator. Like, in most stories, you have a person who can narrate a story. And when you had these rappers who's speaking in this first-person detail, like, they actually done things, I think that's where the misconception comes from. That's where you had these stories, like, this rapper really was doing this at this particular time, excuse me. But when it all boils down, it's still just the art, and it's still just something that someone's speaking on. Just because someone didn't do something, I can't say that they're wrong for speaking on it, because like you said, Tupac was a great writer, and he spoke from a POV that wasn't necessarily himself all the time. He spoke from experiences and looking on to things, because, you know, his family, a lot of his parents and relatives.
Revolutionaries.
Yeah, revolutionaries. Right. And he wasn't around to go through that, but he still spoke about it, and he still influenced people. So I think that's where the misconception come in with most rappers. Most rappers put their self in these drug dealer or these other bad guys' shoes, like the movie CB4. Like, most people haven't seen that. Maybe too young.
I haven't seen it.
You haven't seen that?
You gotta see CB4.
It's very funny, but it's true to hip hop. Yeah. But you know, Gusto was a real actual drug dealer in this place in California. It was a fictional place. Then he got arrested by the cops, and this other guy who used to work for his club took on his name, his persona, his personality, and all his attributes and things like that. Long story short, Gusto came home and he beat him up. But you have those type of things. And that movie is made out of mockery, but it really was showing what was going on in hip-hop way back then, and it's just continuing.
You want to say something, D. Watkins? Go to DDM.
Yeah, just to even jump off that, I do agree that point of view is important. And just speaking from my own personal experience, and I guess like one of the main things I was talking about when I wrote the article is kind of close to what Des is saying, is people don't understand the artistry. They think that if it's a rapper and he's rapping in first person, people can't really differentiate between what's real and what's not real. Whereas if we watch him Breaking Bad, you know that, you know, this is the guy from Malcolm in the Middle. He's the biggest drug dealer in the world on Breaking Bad. But he also, you know, he gets to go into these other, he gets to do multiple things. Whereas like as a hip hop artist, you're completely seen as what you rap about. And that's part of the thing that that we, all of us, have a responsibility, whether you work with the community, whether you're a hip hop artist, whether if you're selling dope, we all have a responsibility to say, look, this is real life, this is what really happens, this is just an art form. So you can appreciate it as an art and you can appreciate that person as an artist, but we're not gonna celebrate this person as a gangster because you know, they're doing some things that are admirable, you know. So
TDM?
My perspective on it all is really about the packaging. I think that a lot of times people expect for music to be true. Throughout the history of music, usually musicians used to minister. Now, because we're in a society where everything is packaged and sensationalized, the artist, even as an artist, you know, they don't say, well, how are you feeling today? They say, what demographic do you speak to? When you go and you have these meetings with labels, they say, well, your look dictates that you should be X, Y, Z. But your personality in real life dictates this. So we need you to make records like this because your voice fits that. Unfortunately, especially for black artists, especially because the community doesn't buy records, you're behind the eight ball because you want to have this great career and you want to follow your dream, but at the same time, you're held to a standard by your own community and a standard by statistics and numbers in the record industry. So I would like, Jay-Z says it best, I would like to rap like Common Sense, but when I look at my statement and what I need to do, I haven't rapped like Common Sense, okay? When you look at Gil Scott-Heron, okay, that man died broke, addicted to drugs. Very true to his artistry, but for all of these people that want to hear real life and ministering and outreach, none of those people went to buy his records. None of those people were going to his shows like that, but they were going to the Al Green show. They were going to the Rick James show. Why? Because you got to be able to sell a product. This is, nothing's changed since Rome. It's like gladiators. This is an arena. People want to be entertained.
So, go ahead, Dante. I have a question. Go ahead.
So I listened to the everyone that's in here. And so what I'm thinking about that child that's grown up in the community. I'm thinking about that drug dealer that's on the corner. I'm thinking about that community that is poverty stricken. Dad not there, mom's working three or four jobs because she's trying to make the ends meet, but technically, she's not there. I'm looking at the drug dealer who got the nice car, who got the jewelry, who even modeled to some of the young people, look, go, because they, drug dealers know their community. So, you know, they mold certain people in the community. So I know your mother's not home. I know dad is not around. You go to the store, here go a $50 bill, go buy yourself a chicken box, go buy your little brother something. When you come back with the change, you keep the change. Oh, my goodness. Do we know what just happened to the psychological of that young person? Then you got the music that glorifies, you know, what you can do, financial means. So when I look at the elements of my neighborhood, I look at poverty, and then I look at what the rappers are presenting, whether it's going to be marketed a certain way or what. The end product is we go and find rap. The end product is we got a lot of people dying. I held a young boy gurgling off his blood, taking his last breath. So, you know, I'm glad to be a part of this dialogue, you know. But I understand the point of views and different things of that nature. But it's reinforcing death. Especially, and even if we're not the main group of people buying the music, it's still a negative impact because we the ones going to jail. We are the ones based on third grade's academic scores that jails are being built. We got to do something different. I'm sorry, but
well, my thing is this. Well, that's true as far as the music and stuff, but we live in a city where most of the city didn't vote in the mayoral election. You had a great candidate in Catherine Pugh, and nobody showed up to the polls. Mm-hmm. But everybody has everything to say about Rawlings. Mm-hmm. You know what I'm saying? Mm-hmm. My thing is this. Being a child, I was that child that grew up in a home where my mother worked all the time. Mm-hmm. I was that child who went to school, mm-hmm. you know, poor, thrift store, mm-hmm. stealing, mm-hmm. you know what I'm saying? But I was also that child that looked into the arts. And when I would go into my community, see, the thing is, people focus on the problem children, and you need to do that. But if we look in the community, what about those kids that want more, are visual, have these talents, are looking outside of the box? You kind of ignore those children and you kind of dismiss them. And then those children who can become leaders, they wind up leaving and they really kind of turn their back on the community because they don't feel supported by it.
So lots coming up out of here. I know that everybody in this room wants to jump in, and Jay Biz has just called in from WEA Strictly Hip Hop. I want to give him a shot to say something. But I think that Dez and D. Watkins, and I know Love wants to say something, so go.
Yeah, so both of you guys make extremely valid points. And my major thing is that the art is not being celebrated enough. That's why I said we have a responsibility. Now, to speak on my own, I've sold crack. My first car was an Altima, then a Lexus, then a brand new Escalade, and I wore jewelry that no one could get but Jay-Z and Reverend Jamal Bryant. I know the heavens. And just like Rick Ross has a right to talk about what he has to talk about, I have a right to start this conversation in this dialect. And I feel like the hells aren't being talked about enough. I can talk about my jewelry and the things I had all day long, right? But I can also tell you that at one point I was attending funerals biweekly, right? Some of my best friends going away, catching big numbers, 20 years, 30 years, double lives and things like that. So what I'm saying, I'm not saying that you know, I'm not the figure to say what rapper or who's allowed to talk about what or who should do what. You should be able to talk about whatever you want to talk about. I'm saying from my perspective and where I come from, I feel like the other side needs to be equally represented.
What's the other side?
The other side is that you can make money, you can have fun, you can, you know, meet friends that you'll have for life. But at the same time, some of them friends can die at 15, 16 years old. Some of them still going through puberty with bumps on their face and, you know, getting murdered. You know, you're in the street, but you're still a virgin. You know, you can meet friends for life, right? And you can lose them. And you can make a lot of money. You can have fun. You can do some amazing things. But at the same time, you know, your mother can be strung out. Your father can be strung out.
That's cool. I just want to get finish what you're saying.
I'm saying that any artist, I think artists have a right to talk about whatever they want to talk about. But I'm saying as an artist, my personal responsibility is to tell both sides. And I do that in my writing. And I do that when I talk to young people. And I do that. And I feel like if you're in the street, you have that responsibility to, you know, to, so how you say kids look at these things and they glorify, right? You know, if you, you know, a lot of drug dealers are telling you, don't do this. Here's this change. Go to school. You know what I mean? So it's like, that's important. The same way some kids are drawn towards selling drugs is the same way. There's a lot of these people who do this who are telling kids not to. And, you know, some people don't, but a lot of people do. And I think it's important.
So let me get to the phones here. I mean, because I want to kind of come back and talk about questions of what can be controlled and what can't be controlled, mm-hmm. and what you do about it, and where's the line between the right to artistry and what gets heard and what gets sold and what doesn't and why.
Right.
I mean, the reason some of this stuff is happening that, you know, I mean, and so let me go to the phones first at 410-319-8888. Jay Biz, you're on the air.
Hey, what's going on, Mark Steiner? How you doing, sir?
Very well, man. Welcome.
Thank you. What's going on, panel?
Hey, what's
up,
man? How you feel?
It's all good, fam. Yeah, man, I'm just, I was chiming in on the back end of this conversation, and, yeah, man, it's really sad how Rick Ross got the microphone like that, though, bro, because, like, artists like Nas, that's really talking about something, building, empowering, inspiring, you know, they don't get the same spotlight and the same, you know, stage that Rick Ross would get. And I can understand that, you know, people like Jay-Z, you know, You know, they sold their drugs. They flipped their packs. You know, that was that man's reality at one point. But you gotta ask yourself, all right, so at what point do you grow up? You know what I mean? At what point do you transition? And one thing I can dig about Jay-Z's music is that, mm-hmm. you know, Reasonable Doubt, he was talking about flipping that, you know what I mean? But, you know, as his music progressed, as his, you know, his career moved forward, you know, all that talk about flipping all these packs and all that, it showed out because you're growing up. You know what I'm saying? We're grown men now. We got kids. You know what I'm saying? We don't do the same things. We don't run as wild as we used to, you know? And I can respect artists who transitioned to grown man music instead of, you know, I'm still flipping this and running with my boys and my son. You know, his mom taking care of him, so he good. But I'm out here. You feel me? I got this car. Look at this car, yo. You know what I mean? Come on, man. Grow up, yo. For real.
Jay-Biz, I look forward to having you back on the air here with us. Go ahead, love.
I think that to put two concepts together that we've spoken about how it is a lot of the people are acting. A lot of it is scripted. So when you start to talk, Dante, is it Dante?
D. Watkins.
Just D? Okay, I'm sorry. As you talk about how they should talk about the other side, I start to think about, well, who's going to write that script? Because these people, a lot of them are not speaking from a place of knowing. Just like the brother just said over the phone that Jay-Z moved into a different direction because his life did. He could no longer write as a true mm-hmm. writer. It's hard, and I know this firsthand. As a true writer, it's very hard to write from a place of dishonesty when you don't live in it anymore. If he would continue to write like that, he'd probably stay there, and he wouldn't be this mogul that he is today. So he chooses to give us that story. But a lot of these actors, especially Rick Ross, who in his music makes poor references, I am not surprised that his name doesn't match his persona, because in his songs, he's in Tupac's back, he says, "Brenda's having my baby."
Oh my God!
Do you understand what I'm saying? And if anybody understands the song,
the 12-year-old rape victim.
Yeah, exactly. If anybody understands the song, Brenda's got a baby. She was a rape victim, and she put her baby in a trash can. You were Brenda's baby's daddy, so you make bad references, you know what I mean? And he does that throughout a lot of his songs if you listen to the words, so I'm not surprised that his name is a complete misnomer for his own personal self. But what I'm saying is, if these people are actors, and most of them are, who is gonna write that script that won't sell? What writer is gonna write a script that won't sell? So we need to figure out what these record labels are asking for and why. And why are they doing that to our people? And why is that in our children's ears regularly with the advent of the internet and all these things? I know my mama was able to keep me away from that. And there was also a balance in the music. Where's the balance? There's no balance anymore. Most of everything that you hear has something to do with this negativity, misogynistic messages, all types of drug references. The balance used to be you could turn on the radio and hear Salt and Pepper or Kid and Play or something like that. Maybe I'm dating myself. Mm-hmm. But you could also hear, you know what I mean? You could also barely, but you could hear, you know, some of that more gangster rap that was coming from the West Coast and things of that nature. But there is no balance now. You know, we just have one or two anti-Molly rappers. Luckily, they're bigger names. But what if we didn't? You know what I mean?
There was a study that was... we'll take a break here in a minute and come back to everybody else. But there was a study that was done the University of California, Berkeley, about different genres of music. And one of the things it said in the study was rap music was consistently associated with alcohol use, potentially alcohol use disorder, illicit drug use, and aggressive behavior. The report also said nearly half of all rap hip-hop songs mentioned alcohol as compared to only around 10% of any other popular genres. Two-thirds of rap songs mentioned illicit drugs as compared to one-tenth of songs from any other genre. Mm-hmm. So, I mean, this is...
It's cracking the 40-ounce all over again.
So, I mean, and it's... So, but there's this... To me, there's a really dangerous marriage between... And we'll take a break here and let you all comment on this when we come back. A dangerous marriage between street culture, which... mimics itself as black culture when it's not,
mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. and the power of the folks who own the music business and what they want to sell and why, because there's this many suburban white kids who do not go to jail doing the same drugs mm-hmm. and doing the same misogynist activity against women because of the drugs. Mm-hmm. So what does that say about But how does that come back to responsibility? Mm-hmm. So we'll come back to that. 410-319-8888. Carly, your next caller up, and we'll come back to this conversation. Stay with us.
Travel my way, take the highway, that's the best. Get your kicks on Route 66.
Migos song, Hannah Montana, 410-319-8888 is our number here, and we are here with our guests, Dee Watkins, who wrote the article, How Glamorizing Drugs is Killing Black Kids. Love the Poet is with us, DDM, DEZ are with us, two Baltimore-based rappers, and Dante Wilson, a founder of Reclaiming Our Children and Community Project, 410-319-8888. Let's go right to the phones and come right back to our guest picking up on the comment we left off here. Carla, you're on the air.
Good morning, Mark. I barely get an opportunity to call into your show because I'm usually at work.
Well, I'm glad you called.
I'm in transit now. Thank you. So I wanted to address a couple of things. One is that there is positive, you know, hip-hop, but unfortunately, it is not marketed. You do not hear it on the radio. So you would have to, like, find out who these people are. Like, for example, there's a brother in Baltimore named Khalil who does some very powerful hip-hop. And also, you know, the artistry of it is worldwide and it's affected positive change. So the question is, how do we in our community, of the community that created it, you know, take it back as opposed to letting the record labels and those people who do not have our best interests in heart to control what comes out of our mouths and what we hear? The second thing is, one of the guests talked about the most recent mayoral election. I think a lot of that vote was suppressed. And that's a whole nother conversation. But, you know, when you talk about the low voter turnout, a part of it was if we weren't listening to Mark Steiner and Anthony McCarthy, you would not even have heard about a general election in 2011. So a lot of the vote was suppressed, especially if you did not belong to a certain party. And I will take your responses off the end.
Thank you, Carla. Thank you, Carla. Let's go back to the first thing Carla was saying and talk about it both in terms of what I was laying out at the very end of the conversation before we went to break. I don't want to get off too much into the election because that'll take us in a different direction. That I want to kind of focus on where we are. And so when we talk about this kind of dangerous marriage, I think between the popular music that comes out of the street, that it came out in many different forms, but the only one picked up by Madison Avenue was the form that glamorizes drugs and murder and misogyny. I mean, so what is the response? And what's the responsibility of individual artists who may not care whether or not they make $1 million or whether they make $50,000?
As an independent recording artist, meaning I pay for everything I do and I say what I want, I think the emphasis shouldn't be on the rappers. I think it should be on the corporations and the companies who's promoting it, because when you boil things down, you have so many different styles of rap, and you have rappers who rap about anything you want to hear. From any type of subject, it's all about what company is going to put how much money behind them. So when it all boils down, I don't think the emphasis should be on rap and what's being glorified. It should be what's being promoted and being projected out there as the face of rap. And people keep saying Rick Ross. I wanted to say, put this out there. Rick Ross just became a multi-selling platinum artist, but his name is out there like he's the biggest out here. You have artists who speak much more positive, much more political topics than Rick Ross, and they sell way more than Rick Ross.
Like who?
Many. You have Common Sense. He's in movies. You have Mos Def. You have Talib Kweli. These guys been around for years, and they still make movies. They write books. They do seminars. They write intelligence. You have an artist in Houston named Bun B. He's a professor. You have a lot of hip-hop artists that are professors. The White, he's a street guy. But like I say, companies, the record companies, the radio stations, they only play certain styles of music, and that's what the kids right. are listening to. So I think we need to put some type of light on that as well.
I agree. Just to play devil's advocate, I agree that we need to put some pressure on them. But it's harder to mobilize people to do that because really what you need is a campaign. Mm-hmm. When you talk about a campaign, you know, look at that. First of all, we live in food deserts. So every store that we see in our community is really these carryouts, you know, mm-hmm. they're selling unhealthy food. But when you look at the billboards that's inside the carryouts, it's still reinforcing the negativity and things of that nature. So same way these companies have money to support and promote what they need, really need to be a strategic plan, and somebody need to put money behind that. And so we could change the image of what we want to present in the communities. The only problem with that is we don't have nobody that's stepping up who's willing and able to actually do that, because it's systemic. Now, I'm also a minister, so I'm not just looking at it on the natural plane. The other plane I'm looking at it on is spiritual. It is systemic how it's set up to be able to kill people mentally, and then that's what we see in our communities. So there are different ways to present rap. How many people? I like Talib Kweli. How many people bumping him? Mm-hmm.
Now you have people out here that's listening to him. Like, I can give you names of different blog sites and websites where you have different outlets for hip hop, for a wider spread of hip hop. Even on 88.9, like on the week, I forget the date, they play hip hop all night. They don't play one style of hip hop. Mm-hmm. But when you go into like these marketing and these campaigns used by these companies, you gotta understand that they're gonna attack weak, vulnerable people. So they're gonna go at kids, and kids don't really have an understanding on what's life. So you take these rappers who's really not making any sense, and they put these fraudulent stories on. There's gonna be manipulation all the time. Mm-hmm. But we need to be more independent. Stop going to these records, because he just hit it on the nose. When you sit in front of these record company people, they tell you who you can sell your music to. Mm-hmm. Like, you haven't been making music all your life. Like, right. So mm-hmm. I think if we were more independent and we were less, I think we was to stop asking for so much. Mm-hmm. You won't put your hands your life in the hands of these people where they can market your stuff and control you like that. So I think it should be independence.
Everybody jump in here, because we have a lot of folks in this panel, so I want to give a chance to say something.
Can I just piggyback
on? Then go over to D. Watkins. Go ahead.
I think that is very true, and what he's saying. I was just talking to a friend about this. I say the reason why hip-hop is the way it is because a lot of the power has been released. A lot of our major players, and even down to clothing companies, in the early 2000s, you had Rockaware, Sean John, all these companies that were selling within a community, making millions of dollars, and we still owned it to a certain extent. So you were able to have Nelly come out and give you a 10 million seller, and, you know, have these happy songs and work with country artists. Now, all of the major companies have either merged or either sold their companies off. But, you know, that goes back into black ownership. And once we build the company and it's, you know, got a name, we get rid of it. We don't pass it down to the next generation. Like, Bad Boys should be Motown.
But I would also say that nobody does that anymore, period, no matter what race you are.
That's true.
Every company is being bought up by the...
That's true.
No matter who you are.
But for an art form like hip-hop that is made... It's like punk rock culture now. It's made off of... not having. It's made from nothing.
Right.
So to keep that integrity, you don't see. We can't just go down Nashville and cut a record with Taylor Swift, because they keep that community tight. Okay? You the candy, you can be on Housewives, but you're not writing no country records. She ain't got a placement yet.
But even Nashville is owned by the same record companies that own hip-hop.
Mm-hmm.
Nobody owns. It's all owned by the corporate mentality who's going to define what gets on the radio stations.
That's true, but also, too, my thing is with kids, man, kids gotta, I hate to bring it back to politics, but it goes hand in hand with it. The most qualified candidate don't win the election all the time. It's the most charismatic one that relates to the people. You know what I'm saying? But Rock did not win the election just because he was the best candidate. He knew how to talk to people, multiple demographics. What? Because if you just bake, he can't win an election with just black people. You know?
Yeah.
So
you got to be able to talk
to people. Let's just address, you know, the elephant in the room. Something that we all know. The big corporate machine that produces the most popular rappers are not trying to hop on this bandwagon of positive rap music. We know that, right? We know that some of the real stories that goes on in the street is not like going to be represented in a lot of mainstream records. But just to go off of what Dez said, he's an independent artist. He makes music that tells both sides. That's why I thought it was so important to have a person like yourself on the show today, because he tells both sides, even from the perspective of a kid who wants to go to school, but he's just bombarded by street culture from that walk from when he leaves out the house all the way till he gets to class and back. It's important. So the question is, how do we all use our platforms to, one, celebrate the artistry? Because I keep going back to that, because some of the best hip-hop artists are linguistical geniuses. It's the only art form that's experienced. There's no genre that's producing lyrics and storytelling and things that connect with the community more than hip-hop. You will not get the same feeling from certain R&B tracks that you'll get from a rapper who's really using his, you know, so am I
using his tools for good?
Who's using his tools for good?
To express.
So how do we use our platforms? How do we use our platforms collectively to, one, make sure these real stories are being told, and two, to help people celebrate the artistry? Like, Jay-Z doesn't have a Rolls Royce from rapping. I mean, from selling drugs. Jay-Z has a Rolls Royce from smart business decisions. So how do we shed light on that? How do we use our platforms to let people know that Rick Ross isn't Maybach riding around in Maybachs from selling coke? Rick Ross is riding around in Maybachs because he owns every chicken store in America. How do we celebrate these things, and how do we promote that? And that's the answer to me.
Well, I think that, if I may chime in briefly, there's a brother who's a good friend of mine and a producer who produced a couple of my albums. His name is Kariz, and he does a program called Kariz Kids. And he takes the aspects of production and hip hop and counting bars and the measurements and all of those things, and he teaches it. He helps it to teach math in the school systems, not only here but also in New York and places like that. So I think being able to show the parallels between what this and what you said, brother, about telling them, okay, as a correctional officer, you had to pass a test. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? Taking it and putting it in real life context, because as much as we are upset about how what the children are hearing, there was really not a lot of difference in my generation growing up either. I listen now back to the music I listened to as a young person and I cringe. I had no idea for real what those lyrics really meant from a perspective of, like, when we hear it, we're like, oh, when they hear it, they're just like, oh, okay. Oh, okay. You know what I mean? A brother, I posted this, your article, online yesterday, and a brother said he has to hide the play money and where he works at the school because the kids want to talk about how many stacks they have. You know what my answer to him was? I said, bring a Monopoly game in and let them see how fast those stacks move. You know what I mean? Bring in the game of life. Show them how that money, yes, get it, but let me show you how to get it and what you need to do with it.
I mean, a lot of people have called in. We've lost all the callers. We got one left. Let's call back at 410-319-8888. People trying to get in with their thoughts on this. 410-319-8888. And morning, you're on the air.
Well, you know, the sister just took what I had to say, that when I listen to the music, I listen back to when I was in my teens, preteens, I cringe. Because when you find out that he's talking about a girl who was a hooker, who the pimp picked her out and then she committed suicide, you're going, what? And second of all, the people who listen to hip-hop, who buy it, 70% of them are white. Mm-hmm. So if you think there's a message going out to black kids, you got to understand the same message is going to white kids. And finally, the artists are not told what to write. They're writing for either their genuine experiences or from their life or for what they hope would be the experience. So the record company is not telling them what to
write. Oh, really?
Oh, no, ma'am. They do have what is called a ghostwriter. And they are being told exactly what to write, because if they don't, they will lose their deal and be shelved. That is just one of the facts of the industry. Unfortunately, I wish it wasn't, but it is very true that they are telling them what to write.
But what we have done is we've come into an era in this genre of music that, when you think about all the history of music, most music came out of working people's cultures, black, mm-hmm. white, whatever they were in America, right? Blues, soul music, mm-hmm. you name whatever, jazz. But what's happening now is, I mean, there's a direct relationship between the dislocation of most Americans, dislocation of a huge percentage of black America in inner city neighborhoods, and the music that comes out of that. Do you know what I'm saying? I mean, music came out of other places because there was a hope, there was a yearning to get through. I mean, jazz was about building a different world and a new kind of world. And what's been taken off now is just the violence and the hopelessness that comes out of the corner, but that's all the message that they want to push. Then, you know, we talked earlier about, I think during a break, about Neil deGrasse Tyson, who is this incredible astrophysicist from the Bronx, who runs the Hayden Planetarium and is now doing Cosmos, this whole series about the universe, right? Well, that should be celebrated. But we don't hear that celebrated in the song, right? Do we hear that celebrated in the song?
No, absolutely not.
You know? I mean, but what we keep, also, like, you're talking about entrepreneurial stuff. Mm-hmm. I mean, the reality is that most people in America are not going to own businesses. Most people are going to work for a living, either teaching or as an astronomer or as a doctor and work for a hospital or do whatever they do. They're not going to have their own chicken business. Mm-hmm. And I wouldn't want to be in a chicken business selling death food to my people or anybody else's people. But, but you know, so, but, so I mean, this, it's a very complex thing about what we're doing to our culture and what's being allowed out there, because it puts young black kids in jail and it creates misogynist violent activity in middle-class white kids as well. They just don't go to jail.
And that's where we come in.
They go to rehab.
They go to rehab. They go to different alternatives. That's where we come up with
They get affluenza.
That this proportion of minority confinement, because you have more blacks being arrested and incarcerated, even though you have more Caucasians doing the same type of crimes, but they just get alternatives that we don't receive in things. However, when it comes to the entrepreneurship, I'm not saying that they should open up chicken spots, but it's the thought process that we can teach you how to really secure your family. You see what I'm saying? And not die. You know, one of the things that I just want to put this out there, May 3rd, we're going to have something. I would love for y'all, I would talk to y'all off the show, but May 3rd, we having like an anti-violent type awareness at our community center. And one of the people that I'm bringing from New Jersey is Tyrone Muhammad, the mortician. And he has a powerful message for young people, because at the end of the day, they dying. You know, the brother talked about the hells. You know, nobody's really talking about those hells like that. You know, nobody's really talking about, you know, all the homeboys that you have. But at the end of the day, it's your mother who have to scrape up pennies, nickels, and dimes to be able to bury you for a lifestyle that you internalize that is not even real and logistic, you know. And so, you know, after we get off the air, perhaps we could talk more. But I think that's one, that's not the whole thing, but that's one of the interventions that we could provide that becomes a awareness for the community so we can make better choices and decisions.
I think to go in a little more on what you guys were saying, I think the issue that we're talking about shouldn't be with hip-hop, because like you just said, Mark, you have black guys who get locked up for drugs and they're charged with a crime that's a felony, but the same amount of drugs on a white person would be a misdemeanor. So I don't think hip-hop is doing that. I think the lawmakers, and shout out to Michelle Alexander, she wrote New Jim Crow. I had read that book, and that book details a lot of great things about not the culture of hip-hop, but the culture of America's justice system. And just because you have hip or rappers who talk about selling drugs, because myself, I also talk about selling drugs, but I talk about the flip side of it as well. Like, I graduated from high school from a Hagerstown jail, new jail in Hagerstown. So I understand and I know exactly what it means to be locked up, to be sentenced, to be on probation, to have your mother and your father and everybody worried about you. I understand all that. But I think the emphasis shouldn't be on hip-hop. I use my hip-hop to reach younger people in high school and the youth and try to enlighten them. But the thing is, man, we got to change some of those laws. Cause like I said, I'm a person, I'm in a position right now where I got arrested with 2 grams of heroin. This was years ago. But I was charged with a felony, and I had a $200 bill, and I had this crazy circumstances. But I was, my bunk buddy was this white man who got knocked off of like an 8-bar of crack cocaine, and he had got his own recon because he got charged differently. So my thing is not the hip-hop, because I know my perception and I know my agenda when it comes to hip-hop is not to glorify it. It's to do what I'm doing now, is to speak about the ills of not the streets, but the legal system and how people is being railroaded. And that's what I'm trying to put my emphasis on. That's what I want my little homeboys and everybody else to understand, too. We got to keep our eyes on that situation.
Let me open the phone, see if we can. 410-319-8888. Shante, you're on the air.
One love, family, to you and your panel. I want to thank y'all for bringing this issue to the forefront.
Hey, what's up?
I thank y'all so much that, like the brother was just saying, I mean, he got his GED from Hagerstown. These young kids today need to know the other side, the flip side. You know what I mean? Once you are arrested, once you try to get out of jail and you're getting to try to get a job, these are the things that are going to affect your future. So while they're not pronouncing that out there as a forefront, we have a real problem out here where these kids can't even get a new job, cannot take care of their families, and they're talking about child support and other things. I think we definitely need to get a forum where we can divest into these companies and produce our own albums and push them out there to let people know that this is the real deal. One love, family.
Let's get one more call, and he'll come back to panel 410-319-8888. William, you're on the air.
Yes, sir. Good morning, Mr. Steiner.
Good morning, William.
Okay, what I want to talk about is the reason why young people, young black men and women are the way they are, and in my belief, I think it all stems from recreational sex from the parents. Having sex with men over just for a one-night stand, maybe because of a club. And these kids are coming into the world not really appreciated. And they see more appreciation in the streets than they see in the home. And then we create a subculture that I believe is the real problem and cause of the young people and the young women to be the way they are today. Thank you.
And let me read this, and then we can comment on this. This is came in across the wire here. But let me just get this right here. Like Notorious Big, Tupac, Wu-Tang, all rap and selling drugs. So this idea that there was some glory days of hip-hop when everything was cool is just not true, except for maybe some stuff from the early 80s. But there are some pretty positive tracks on radio right now. People like J. Cole doing Crooked Smile, Jay-Z dissing Molly on Tom Ford, Kendrick Lamar's Good Kid, Mad City. It's basically a whole album critiquing violence and drugs and drinking.
Tupac's the definition of both sides. Yeah. Sorry, Tupac's the definition of both sides. Tupac, I mean, like Love said earlier, Brenda's Got a Baby, Keep Your Head Up, White Man's World, and the list goes on and on and on and on and on. I'd let someone else jump in.
I want to say twofold. The parental comment was very interesting. I do want to say that our parents should step up right now. I don't know about the recreational sex idea, but I'm interested in looking into that. But I feel like the parents should step up and actually do better screening of the music and things like that. I know that when I was with a friend of mine and her daughter would be in the back seat, if we pulled up and there was that very loud, obnoxious, whatever they're saying, music, somebody next to us in the car, I would roll the windows up and turn the music up in the car. You know, I know at one point we wouldn't even watch TV. I don't think I watched TV for like 3 years without just putting in a DVD because of what was on, you know what I mean, the television that you didn't want to expose a small child to. But also, I feel like that the rap industry, and to speak about Kendrick Lamar's album did talk about and address drugs and stuff like that, but he spoke about it from his perspective that he was not in a gang, but he was always affiliated with one. I don't think he was saying in the album that he was not proud of his where he came from or that he has any regrets.
No, that wasn't said, though.
No, I think that they were just saying that he was kind of talking again about liquor and violence and things like that, but he was talking about it from a standpoint of, like, knowing and being in it. So he's telling stories. So it wasn't like he was just anti-this, anti-that. It was like, let me tell you the story and let me tell you about how I feel about it and how I don't feel about it. That's what I got from the album.
We have, like, 3 minutes left in this conversation.
No, that's cool.
Closing thought? Very quick.
Just very quickly. I understand that it's a multi-view, multi-lens to look at this. However, at the end of the day, we have children dying. Mm-hmm. At the end of the day, we have a lot of negative things that's in our community. And so if there are different lenses that we can look through, I think we need to come together on some of those and help monument that. I don't know if it's a campaign that we do. I don't know if it's things that we do, city tours or whatever the situation may be. But there's some alternative ways, because at the end of the day, young people are influenced by these entertainers and they mimicking those particular lifestyles. I'm not blaming it on the rapper. I'm not blaming it on the corporation. But let's look at the end result and how can we reverse that.
Absolutely.
I might blame it on them. I mean, a combination of... Well, anyway, I wish we had a whole lot more time because this is really fascinating. And two quick 30-second thoughts. Literally 30 seconds.
You know, hip-hop is hip-hop. Entertainment is entertainment. People love to be entertained. But There's just like there's different kinds of movies, there's different kinds of records. Life Ready to Die was a very instrumental record to me because it was like a black man going through a depression. People miss that about that record. That record is the equivalent to Jagged Little Pill for hip hop to me.
Dez.
And I like to say thanks for having me, and y'all check me out, fmgdez.com. And like just gonna send a special shout out to FMG, Flanders Music Group.
Dez and DDM, two of Baltimore's based rappers, and Chris is all inspired by D. Watkins' piece that he wrote, which we'll be linking to on our website, How Glamorizing Drugs is Killing Black Kids. I'm glad you're out there writing even more and more. Good to have you back in the studio, D. Watkins.
Thank you. Thanks for having
me. That was a great article.
Thank you.
Dante Wilson, also here in the studio. Good to have him back, as always, CEO and founder of Reclaiming Our Children and Community Project, and the great spoken word artist and author of Black Marks on White Paper, Love the Poet. Good to have you in the studio as well.
Always a pleasure.
Reminding you, on the way out of here, the Mark Steiner Show is brought to you in part by MeQ, Baltimore's credit union, offering a full range of financial services. MeQ, Baltimore's credit union, is helping its members and its community to prosper. When you invest in yourself, MeQ invests in you. More information at www.mecu.com. And the Mark Steiner Show is brought to you in part by the Maryland State Education Association. From school funding to Common Core, you can learn about the important issues affecting Maryland students, parents, and schools by visiting the Maryland State Education Association's website at MarylandEducators.org. That's one word, MarylandEducators.org. The Mark Steiner Show is a production of the Center for Emerging Media. Our producers are Mark Gunnery and Seth Mavronis. Our engineer is Andre Melton. Theme music by Wal Matthews of Clean Cuts. You can go to SteinerShow.org and download information about our guest. Find their music, find their writing, and more. Just go to SteinerShow.org. You can also podcast from there, but you can also go to iTunes and podcast Mark Steiner Show as well. WEAA 88.9 FM, the voice of the community. I'm Mark Steiner. Take care.